I'm Rachel Riley, and you're listening to the Power of Us podcast, brought to you by Legal & General. The current COVID crisis has thrown some of society's most important issues into sharp relief. Inequality and community decline need addressing more urgently than ever. What can we do to tackle these and build ourselves a better future? Introducing our panel today. First up, we have Alex Schlagman, founding partner of SaveTheHighStreet.org. Welcome, Alex.
Thanks for having me, Rachel.
Thank you for coming. Next up, we have Chris Moore, chief executive from The Clink Charity. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us. And last but not least, we have Jen Hartley, director of Invest Newcastle. Welcome, Jen.
Hi, Rachel.
Well, thank you all for joining us to discuss the small matter of fixing society. So let's start with something positive. What are the key ingredients that make for a healthy society? I'll ask you first, Jen.
So I suppose from my point of view, it's all about inclusive growth. It's all about involving all parts of society so that, you know, regardless of your postcode, you get the same opportunity.
So there's the nutshell. What would you add to that, Chris?
Well, I think being a restaurateur, I would say food. I think also to have a fair society. And I think that's the main thing, is everybody contributing to society in their own way.
So we've got food, we've got inclusivity, we've got fairness, and we've got everyone able to contribute. Alex, you're the third partner to add to what you think makes for a healthy society.
Well, I would firstly echo Chris and Jen on those points there. Definitely opportunities for individuals to contribute and have an impact on their community. I think it's also very important when we think about, you know, the term society, you know, what that really means. Are we talking here about, you know, communities locally? Are we talking about economy? So I think there's a lot to be said about bringing these things together into our town, village and city centres to create, you know, places where people can live, work and play effectively in the future.
So I think that's a really great point. And it's up to you guys to define how you want to see that, really. Are we talking about tiny little villages? Are we talking about towns, cities, countries, or even, you know, possibly EU or globally? What are we thinking about?
Well, we've got to start at the bottom up. And, you know, if we can have an impact on the places where people live, work and play, you can start to have a material impact on society. Ultimately, the real change happens at the grassroots, at the bottom up.
Chris, would you go along that local communities for local people?
Very much so, yes. I think it's really important. And I think during the pandemic, we've probably seen that play out more than we have done before. And everyone's starting to shop locally, support locally. It's certainly been refreshing to see that play out over this period.
And Jen, you mentioned inclusivity when you talked about one of the key ingredients for a healthy society. Do you think it's possible for individualistic communities to coexist side by side? Or do you think a society, a healthy society, needs full diversity?
I think, I'm definitely of the view that society needs that diverse makeup. Most of my time is focused on the city of Newcastle, but obviously we have a global outlook. And we do, you know, we see a lot of people sort of living and working on the outskirts of cities, but going into the cities to do their, you know, main business. For me, I think we need to embrace the diversity, and that's going to help us to be, you know, more efficient and to tackle, these future city problems.
And if people are kind of commuting from small communities or small villages where they might, you know everybody, into a large city like Newcastle, do you think it's harder to foster the same sense of community in, you know, a much more diverse, wider area where people don't necessarily live?
Yeah, definitely. Although I've got to say, it's weird. In Newcastle, we do sort of joke that we've got a bit of a 2 degrees of separation because everybody does seem to know each other quite well. But you're right, there needs to be a kind of more of an effort for people to sort of collaborate. And that's something that we've, you know, as a city council and as a sort of a regional authority, we've been quite keen to drive some of those almost collaborative programmes.
And you mentioned there Newcastle, you know, it's known as a friendly city, isn't it? You've said everybody knows each other. Alex and Chris, do you see regional shifts with how people look after each other, how they interact?
Chris, if you don't mind, I'll jump in first.
No, go ahead.
I think the reality is every single place needs a plan and it needs to have a clearly defined role. And those roles could have multi sides to them, you know, so the city centre of Newcastle could serve many, many purposes to the communities, because every single place needs its own identity and its own set of individuals. We call them at Save the High Street Dog, we call them local champions, who are the, you know, people who live and breathe what it takes to succeed, particularly on the high street, but even more broadly as a town centre. I do think there are certain sort of stereotypes that could be applied between north and south. We don't see that as much, but we definitely see a lot of differences between places of certain size.
We've covered some of the things that we want to see for a healthy society. Should we move on to some of the cracks?
Well, from my background with the Clink charity, reoffending. We have 86,000 adults in prison in England and Wales. And of those released every year, 47% go straight back to prison, which costs us as a society £18.1 billion in repairing society and getting people back to contribute is very, very important.
And what led you to set up this charity in the first place?
I didn't actually set it up, but I joined just after it had started. But it was the concern of the high reoffending rates, but also pre-COVID, there was a major skill shortage in the hospitality industry. And we knew that if we could train up serving prisoners to get their catering qualifications and real life experience of a fine dining standard, we could get them really good jobs in 4 and 5 star hotels, Michelin star restaurants, and other trades as well. As we'd certainly support them as long as they were legal, to keep them out of prison and to help them to get back into society and contribute and repairing it and repairing family life as well.
Alex, obviously you come from a completely different background, founding partner of Save the High Street. So for you, what are the main problems in our society at the moment?
Well, with a lens on the high street, which is, you know, often talked about as the heartbeat of local communities, the high street is the largest private sector employer. You know, beyond the hospitality industry, you've got retail, services, etc. You know, clearly the success or failure of high streets has a significant impact on society, and COVID-19 has accelerated the necessary transformation, presenting all kinds of new challenges. One of the main ones we're addressing here at SaveTheHighStreet.org is really looking at what can we do with all of these vacant units that are emerging as larger national chains, restaurants and retailers retract from the high street. How do we encourage the next generation of high street entrepreneurs to the high street?
And what are your projections for where the high street might be going?
Firstly, I think the proportional mix between large and small will shift. You know, actually, a lot of high streets weren't carefully planned in terms of the right types of offerings to meet that local community in the first place. And then they moved on to long-term, relatively inflexible lease agreements, so they just sort of stayed there. So what we're seeing moving forward is, A, using this change and all this dynamism that's going on in the market to actually start to recurate the high street so we have the right offerings in the right places for each local community, and introducing much more flexible arrangements between landlord and tenants, much more partnership driven partnerships, not just between landlord and tenant, but between businesses together on the high street and between public and private sector, much more involvement from the local authority, grassroots local champions, all working together.
Jen, what do you see as the biggest cracks in society?
One thing that is a major challenge is around the ageing demographic. Like many other cities, the biggest strain on our council budgets is around the adult service. The strain on that part of the council is by far the biggest strain. So we're really embracing a kind of a vision of helping people to age, live longer, healthier lives. And it's all about, you know, ensuring that interventions are made earlier. I think the average life expectancy now is 81, and you know, we're expecting to see that increase. So, you know, when we're past 50, 60, you know, I think they're the highest purchaser of Teslas and Apple products because they have all of money.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that, because we've done a whole pod on retirement and also on green living. And one of the things that came up in the retirement pod was changing the way that we live, as in the locations for where people are doing it better. And one thing that came up consistently was loneliness in older age. And you think of some older people, the problems they have when banks close and when post offices close. So do you think a healthy community needs a hub?
Yeah, I think the access to amenities is a really key issue. Having more access to post offices and pubs and, you know, places of worship. We're also looking at multi-generational living. So, you know, homes that you can actually grow old in and that, you know, change as you change. We're also seeing more kind of, you know, families moving in together. I think certainly, you know, COVID has kind of pushed that, particularly, you know, for obvious childcare reasons.
And if we're thinking about living better, how do we think our infrastructure will need to change?
It's going to be a lot of learnings that come out of the last few months. Obviously, this is a controlled experiment no one expected to have to go through. And yeah, I think we're in a situation right now where the way that we work, the way that we spend time, you know, in our sort of high street type environments is being challenged and tested in new ways. One other thing I'll just build on that as well is with the advancements going on around virtual services, we can stay in touch, we can stay connected. You know, this year may well be looked on as the sort of the year that, you know, we suddenly realize that, you know, going to an event virtually, you know, is actually much more efficient than going to an event in the real world. There's a sort of push and pull going on here between, you know, our drive and our need to, you know, interact in the real world and be with people, as well as a sort of convenience that's being thrown up by the technologies and by the fact that we've got a lot of the things we need all around us.
So are we going to be changing our living arrangements, the way we use transport, whether we commute or work from home, obviously, in the wake of COVID? Are we going to be changing things more permanently?
You know, the COVID-19 impact has potentially had long-term ramifications in our preferences and attitudes around travelling. We've learnt to stay local. We've learnt to experience and fulfill everything we really need without leaving our local areas very much. And as you said, quite a lot of people have quite enjoyed that. So I think we're getting to a situation right now where we're potentially opening the door to a longer term shift in consumer preferences and attitudes towards travel. Simultaneous to this, there's changes going on in the use class system to allow more residential to be built in town centres, as well as other commercial uses, so people can live in the same places where they shop and they play. So in some cases, there needs to be really purposeful and quite considerate regeneration work to actually create places that people can not just live in, but also achieve other sort of goals. In other cases, interestingly, I think we need to be quite radical in understanding that, you know, we can't necessarily invest in every area the same. Every place needs to have a plan and needs to have a role. So as long as we keep the lens on, every single place needs to have a clearly defined role and a clearly defined plan, what we'll find from that is there will be a difference between the investment levels and the types of investments that go on into those places.
Chris, as the chief executive of a charity involved with restaurants, have you found that people actually, you know, as soon as restrictions were lifted, they were dying to get out of the house and come and eat with you?
Yes, we have. We obviously had to shut the restaurants at the end of March, and the public until last week weren't allowed back in. And actually, we've opened one of our restaurants in style in Cheshire last week on a very much reduced capacity, but we're fully booked this week and for next week. They're willing to come back and support our students. But during the pandemic, when restaurants weren't allowed to open, we had to sort of reinvent the wheel. So we were able to still train the prisoners in prison, but we had no one to eat our food. So first of all, we developed something called Clink and Collect, which was actually ready-made chilled meals for the prison staff to take home. So due to the success of that, we rolled out Clink at Home, where we're doing a home delivery service. Some of our Clink graduates who left us over the last 18 months are now operating the delivery van.
Well, that's fantastic. And we've been talking about, you know, jobs and purpose and the economy. But do you think happiness, you know, should be higher up the list of things that we think about. Jen?
I think well-being is key to everything at the moment. And I've certainly seen over the past, God knows, 10, 15 years that I've kind of been in economic development, that actually we're more and more driven by, you know, the well-being of individuals, of employees. It's part of our social value and our impact analysis that we put to investors to say, you know, if you're going to create jobs in the city, then we want you to be considerate about the well-being of the staff. And that can be everything from work-life balance, you know, to, you know, being able to have low commute times, you know, being next to the beach and the country, and as well as smarter ways of working, access to amenities, to decent schools. And actually we've formed something called the City Futures Board, which, as sort of Alex was saying earlier, it involves both public and private sector representatives. And it's really about building that vision, that collective vision for the city and the wider region. Obviously it's you know, it's been a challenge, and it's covered a lot of, you know, of what we're going through at the moment, particularly on our kind of local enhanced restrictions that we've got in the Northeast at the moment.
Chris, you work with offenders. Do you think it starts at a really young age? Do we need to teach school kids how to be happy?
What we tend to find is there's a bit of a pattern. And normally, or generalizing but it's the family. Either there's the wrong family or no family. And by the time they come to us, sadly, they haven't really got the right identity. But as soon as we work with them in a real-life working environment, you can see the light switch go on, and they look you in the eye, they've got a smile, they're walking tall, and all of a sudden they seem to have got a hope for the future. Actually, getting up in the morning, putting on your uniform, combing your hair, going to work as part of a team, they all of a sudden come alive. We monitor TripAdvisor and feed that back to them as well. So I think that's very important for them, and giving them a hope for the future. And I think also the other group of people we're educating is members of the public. And by allowing them to come and dine in the heart of our prisons, help them realise that the prison population is a cross-section of society, just like us.
I remembered this documentary I've just watched about cheerleaders, believe it or not, and it's the same thing, that these kids had a really bad life to start with, and this sense of this cheerleading gave them their sense of family, their sense of community and their purpose in life. And it sounds like obviously you're doing that with Kling. But how do we achieve that? How do we achieve the sense of family or community for people that may fall through the cracks before they go out and possibly offend?
So they sit round a table, which is recreating family. And a lot of the men and women haven't actually had that experience. So when I'm around or my colleagues around, we'll sit and join them. We normally start with, what did you watch on television last night? And then it really grows.
It's really simple things, isn't it, at the end of the day, that can, you know, lead to happier people and a, you know, a more of a sense of community. Do you think we're currently moving away from, you know, that close-knit group of people? You know, back in the day, you think of neighbours, everyone knows each other, everyone leaves their door open. Do you think as society, you know, moves forward, we can ever regain that?
I think we've sort of been accelerated, as Alex said earlier, through the pandemic. We've all returned back to home, and we're living and working in our community. Whereas before, I would probably commute up to London at least three times a week, and maybe Manchester and Cardiff as well. I'm now doing this via Zoom, and it can be very productive, but also you get a lot more time back as well. So certainly I'm spending a lot more time in the community that I live in.
Alex, do you think we're going in a, you know, we can use this as an opportunity to go in the right direction in terms of, you know, possibly not necessarily leaving your door open, but getting to know your neighbours a bit more?
One point that's been mentioned has been around education, for example. And, you know, if we look at the curriculum around education, you know, arguably this has been broken now for a while. And are we teaching young people the things that they need to know from an early age to be happy, to be fulfilled? The reality of the situation is, you know, we're on a quite accelerating path towards a fourth industrial revolution driven by a lot of automation, where some of the jobs that we trained people to do from a young age aren't going to exist in the same way in the future. So we're now in a situation where we've got to really look at, how do we educate young people? How do we teach people those really foundational skills to be happy and fulfilled? What do we teach them about gratitude? What do we teach them about giving back? And what do we teach them about, you know, the ability to be part of a successful, cohesive community? The emotional intelligence, I think, is a big piece that has been underinvested in the curriculum. And so COVID-19, yes, but actually I'm optimistic that we're going to accelerate towards a better place than we were before.
And Jen, you mentioned obviously organisations are paying more attention to the well-being of their staff. Do you think it's something that schools should or will follow behind?
Yeah, I'd like to hope so. And I've got a 3-year-old child and he's just gone back to preschool and, you know, a very rural school up here in Northumberland. And they have actually started teaching the ways of kindness and being, you know, part of a community, getting to know the area. And I hope that that does stick. I hope that that does go through, you know, all age groups, because once we see, you know, employers looking at recruiting, it is a key part. We all know that we've worked in teams where, you know, there's somebody who probably, you know, isn't quite as kind to others. You know, those softer skills now are becoming more important than the technical skills.
So we've had interesting themes over the course of this discussion. We're talking about small scale changes to benefit society as a whole. We're looking at small changes to benefit all of us. Do you think we're going to have to change where we get our leaders from for this to actually come into fruition?
Yeah, so I think the concept of leadership has been a big theme around high streets and town centres over the last 3 to 5 years. Common thinking of everyone who's been really close to this, that we need to have leaders on a really local level. Sometimes they're part of organizations like community groups and traders associations. Sometimes they're just individuals that just care a lot about their local community. The local leaders need to be empowered to actually have the impact they want in the places that they love. So I think we need to start to move towards a world where there are leaders on every single high street, in every single town centre, who feel really empowered. So I think there's a big theme at the moment towards the devolution, if you like, of power down to the local level.
Was somebody else about to jump in as well?
I mentioned earlier about, you know, the importance of forming partnerships with cities and regions around the world. Never has this been, you know, more important than it is now. I've been in conversations where I've been with, you know, team in Copenhagen, and, you know, it does feel like you're part and one of the same team. And I think is something that we really should be embracing as, you know, as well. But as Alex said, it's, you know, it's hard to find, you know, that balance between the two, the hyperlocal and the international.
Chris, anything to add to the hyperlocal versus globalisation?
Well, I was going to come back on leadership, really, of just saying I think leadership is absolutely key, and it needs to be someone that's got an infectious enthusiasm, really, to include everybody.
So I'm actually feeling quite positive after all that, after, you know, discussing the huge problem of fixing society. We've actually decided that the enforced experiment of COVID has allowed us to reevaluate what's important, and we can actually use this as an opportunity to fix some of those cracks in society rather than moan about our problems. Well, I felt a great community spirit from the three of you today. Thank you very much for joining me, Alex, Chris and Jen.
Thanks, Fame.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Power of Us podcast, hosted by me, Rachel Riley, and brought to you by Legal & General. Do join us next week, where we'll be looking at entrepreneurs. Are they the best hope for our future prosperity?